Could Minister of Labour welcome, as well as to the Director General of the Department, the Commissioner of the Compensation Fund, and the other officials who are here. We'll do the unusual thing today in that we will not do the introduction because this is the third time we are meeting this year. So it is merely a continuum, a continuation of the engagement that we have had. As comrades will realize, we have not prepared an agenda with a focus area. Exactly in line with the realization that this is a continuation of the earlier engagements that we have had. And comrades will recall that we had taken a decision that at some point in relation to certain departments or certain entities or certain aspects, as a committee, we will seek to continuously engage that department or that entity on those consistent issues until we are satisfied that there is resolution or movement. To be recalled that earlier in the year we had a meeting with the Department of Labor and dealing with the compensation fund where we had a full engagement, after which as a committee we visited the head office of the compensation fund as part of the follow-up to satisfy ourselves that the issues that we were discussing when we were here in Cape Town have really been carried forward. And I suppose we had a fruitful day, not only in terms of discussions, but in terms of being physically taken around to see some of the areas about which we had read in the annual report. And had the opportunity to interact with the comrades. Can we please have some quiet that side? And we were able to also interact with some of the officials who did not have the opportunity to be with us in Cape Town and shared their understanding, how they see the issues and challenges. And so we are here today as part of that process. So that's why I'm saying we don't want to look at this engagement as a new process altogether, but it must be seen as a continuation of those efforts. When we last met, we all agreed that things were not all right at the compensation fund, and there were all sorts of commitments and responses to the issues that were raised. We're here because few things are not what we expect to be or what they're supposed to be. If anything, it appears things have worsened than when we met last time. Which I suppose actually emphasizes the necessity of us engaging on these matters. But I think, Comrade Minister, and I hope we'll find common cause with my comrade on my right.
my approach will be that I don't think that we need to go item by item on what is in the annual report, than to have a conversation on the fundamentals and look at the one or two strategic things that need to happen. Because before and until they have happened or it has happened, we can talk to the specific issues. It might not really take us very far. So my starting point, I would like to ask the Director General, because the last time we were here, he had indicated to us that there is an attempt to solve the problems in the fund by having a turnaround strategy. And when we were in Pretoria, he actually made a request that they would want to make follow-up to come and indicate to us some of the measures in that strategy that would assist to get the compensation fund turned around. So for me, before we go into the content and the details of what is here, for as long as we don't have a strategic intervention to merely pick up snippets here and there and talk to them, I don't think that will assist us. We appreciate and accept that maybe the change that we want might not happen next month. But as long as we're satisfied that there is an intervention process that holds the promise of turning things around, I'm sure it is something that we can live with. Because the reality of the fund is as reported in the annual report. So I would like to hear from the DG. Say, let's start here. Where are we? Because surely this annual report actually emphasizes the emergency situation that we find ourselves in the fund.
No, thank you very much, Chair, Honourable Members, Minister. Let me just start by saying that the commitments that I made before the Standing Committee on Public Accounts is part of the commitments that I had also made in various structures and oversight structures in particular. I had made similar commitments, for an example, to the Audit Committee of the Compensation Fund. I had made similar commitments to also the management, the executive management of the fund. I had also made similar commitments to the Portfolio Committee of the Parliament. And so I had also made the commitment, I'm sure, also to other relevant structures insofar as the work of the compensation fund is concerned. Now, I suppose the bigger question would be, what is it that informed those particular commitments and the approach that I was actually taking? Now, in that, and of course without taking too much time for this particular committee, because had it been that we had probably the whole day sitting here, I would probably add a presentation in terms of how we're approaching it. The first one is that we started an analysis arising out of, by the way, before I talked to the analysis, inquiries had also been made by the public protector. And when I started digging into what the inquiries were about, of course they were about the inefficiencies in the fund and so on, But also, it then emerged that, if I'm not mistaken, 2008 or 2009, Advocate Mufana, who was the public protector, then had produced a report about the deficiencies in the compensation fund. And the public protector now, in the form of Advocate Madolele, was also making follow-ups around some specific issues. And there were some engagements that were also taking place in our management in the fund and the public protector's office and so forth. And eventually, I think one meeting that I attended together with the management of the fund at the public protector's office, I made also similar commitments around the issue of the need to turn around the functioning of the compensation fund. Now, where we started off was to do an analysis, a 4-5 year analysis of the problems at the compensation fund. And in this regard, the way you can only use relevant sources. Okay. One of those are the AG reports produced over that particular period, over a 4-5 year period. One of those was also the two public reported public protector reports, both the Advocate Murana report as well as the one that came thereafter and so on. The third aspect, of course, to full consideration were also issues that had been raised by the Standing Committee on Public Accounts, the issues raised by the Portfolio Committee of Parliament as well previously in dealing with the issues of the compensation fund. Now, the turnaround, the strategy approach itself was intended to look at particularly three components that make up any organization, and specifically the compensation fund. The one aspect related to the people culture in the compensation fund. The other aspect also was the question of the business processes. Now, you will see, for instance, in some of the presentations that I think we will also circulate to this committee at a later point, you'd also see that the business of the fund is largely a manual processing and manual sort of based kind of running. And then the third aspect is also in terms of the system. Now, a system is an enabler to business processes, is an enabler to people having got to do their work. So, largely, besides any other thing, the fundamental pillar of any turnaround strategy deals with this. It's a component of, you know, it's a combination of your people, it's a combination of your business processes as well as the system. Now, these are the presentations that I made to various structures, both internally in the department and also to oversight goals in that regard. Now, the specific key follow-up was made on the 12th of August, if I'm not mistaken, 2012, by the public protector relating to various issues there, of which we also responded, and there has been, you know, the to and froing in terms of putting them at ease about the steps that are beginning to take, besides the normal kind of issues that that occupy fund on day-to-day kind of basis and so on. So we designed that, and in the process, we also were very clear that the kind of work that we're talking about is specialist, the kind of work you need serious expertise to deal with the issue of crafting a turnaround. Managing and executing the turnaround is ours as the administrator, that's fine, but in terms of the actual layers of the design of the thing, that's what you need. So we were very clear that we needed to attract also expertise outside, outside our own competencies as managers, both in the fund and the Department of Labor. Now, we then started the process in January 2013, firstly by setting up a project team, which in large measure was constituted by largely members of the management of the compensation fund, the Competition Commissioner, and was also convened the only person there in that was not part of the Compensation Fund, but was a member of the, and was convened the project team was somebody from UIF. Now, precisely because in any turnaround approach, what you also need must be informed about the actual state of the organization. Now, the actual state of the organization, you can only get it from people who essentially are practitioners in the fund itself. And therefore, we put in various components in there. In the light of the challenges that are there and the capacity challenges, particularly in the Regis office, I needed to capacitate myself, particularly in terms of, firstly, you know, tapping into an existing experience in government around the issues of turnaround, but also making a point that we need to have some degree of similarity between, because it can't just be any turnaround. It has got to make sense to the kind of business that that we're in. And in this regard, I spoke to Dr. Watson. Dr. Watson is the Chief Executive Officer of the Road Accident Fund. And I requested that somebody who has been deeply involved with the turnaround of the Road Accident Fund, for instance, be made available from time to time to us, to assist us in terms of tapping into the knowledge base and experience that the Road Accident Fund has. Now, those of you would remember that the Road Accident Fund, before it became the Road Accident Fund, was called, I think, MVA, the Motor Vehicle Association, it was called. And it had serious problems at one point. At one point, for instance, I think it was a fund that was something like $42 billion in the red or something like that. But they were able to pull it off to the point where today it's quite a fluid kind of entity for the next. So the similarity, in a sense, between the Compensation Fund and the Road Accident Fund first is that the Road Accident Fund deals with injuries, but injuries as a result of road accidents. We deal with injuries and diseases as a result of work of patients. So that's one element around the question of some degree of similarity. The second one. The second one, Chair, of course, is more to do with the fact that, you know, for injuries and occupational diseases, for instance, we have got to deal with the question of claims, certain claims, and particularly medical claims and stuff like that. So also the Road Accident Fund is the same thing. So Dr. Watson agreed and gave us this particular individual. So we started working and, of course, convening the meetings of the project team on a regular basis to go through the whole question of what the approach was to be and what is it that needed to be done and so forth. Up until, I think, a period in March, if I'm not mistaken, somewhere there, therefore we needed to go out on tender. Now, the issue was, you also needed to deal with not just simply conceptually what the turnaround is about, but we also needed to be factually informed by what the actual situation is. Now, if you go through the various reports, qualifications, and disclaimers that you've been receiving in the Compensation Fund, you'd also realize that in some respects, around known cases, we've been making serious losses. Now, any responsible organization, if you're making a loss, for an example, you need to know where are the loopholes, for example, but also how you need to fix those particular loopholes. Loopholes can be either loopholes related to the overall policy framework, or loopholes can be because of a systematic kind of and system kind of deficiencies or any other. You know, it can be all the sort of all sorts of manner of things in that regard. And therefore, a forensic audit investigation needed to be conducted to establish the root cause of this couple of problems. Because you can't fix a problem unless you know. One of the examples I used to make was that if you take an example of a disease like cancer, you know, at some point you are able to spot the cancer spot on your body. What you do not know is whether or not that spot is complete or is it spread right across the body. And I think people who have done medicine and medical science would also tell you that it becomes important to establish the extent to which the disease that would have spread across your body, for an example, so that you are able to then diagnose and then subsequently treat the disease. Now, so we were clear that insofar as the issue of the forensic investigation, for an example, it also needed to feed into the turnaround strategy. I mean, your forensic is something, in a sense, that is more short-lived. You know, when you conduct an investigation, you do so for a month or 2 to 3 months at the most. You take those particular results and you look at how those results must then inform your long-term kind of strategy into the future. And so it goes. So that was the approach here around the two. So when we went out, we were also very clear that the process itself needed to be untainted. We needed to ensure independence of source in terms of thinking and approach, amongst other things. So as a result of which, when the point came for evaluations to be conducted, I spoke to the Commissioner of SARS, I spoke to the DG National Treasury, I approached the DG Constitutional Development, I think that's what they are called, Justice and Constitutional Development, to then say to them, look, we need assistance. We need people that are technically sharp, who can actually do the assist us with the evaluation of this particular tenant from clearly a technical perspective and expertise, the point of view and so forth. And all that we had to do was, yes, to observe the process and take reports that would emanate from such an exercise, for an example. So SARS came back to us and said, in a correspondence, that they were unable to help us precisely because the type of people that we were looking for are the type of people that they do not have. Sorry, the long and short of it was actually that the technical kind of people and sharpness that we were looking for are the type of people that they will not be able to assist us with. So essentially, constitutional development, I think, the justice and constitutional development gave us, I think, about 4 people for the 2 tenders. The National Treasury, they also assisted us, besides just the evaluation thing, but they also assisted us with a fellow, I think, who was in the legal division of National Treasury, in terms of just advising us about other issues, technically speaking, from their side. Now, the gap that was created by not getting some people from us, we then got, I think I may want to check my facts about this one as well, we then got, I think, 2 people from the Department of Transport, who also came on, you know, to assist us with the evaluation thing and so on. Now, let me just say that one of the issues that had arisen, and I was very clear about this thing, and I, you know, for quite some time, even within the project, there was a serious debate about whether or not we should actually be taking this approach. And the approach that I was advocating was that those people who had been associated with a compensation fund, working with a compensation fund, for a period of, let's say, 4 years, they just needed not to bother trying to beat for this kind of work. And my reasoning was simple. I mean, it was of course the reasoning from the strict men of men from the strict, let me put it that way, that you can't have the type of problems that we've had in the compensation fund when you were there and hope that you'll be able to fix them. Simple logic. That was it. But then, of course, people legally saw this thing differently. They said, no, but you can't have exclusion. So, for instance, if you go through the documentation that went out on the end of the first set, actually, there were exclusions. Right? And then they said, no, but there will be constitutional challenges and whatever and so forth. And I was looking forward to those constitutional challenges. I was looking forward to the actual debate about why do you think that people that have been there and associated with this kind of failure, for an example, can turn around and become experts in repositioning an entity such as the compensation fund. Now, this is where I think National Treasury was able to assist us about this fellow who was in the legal division, because the issue then became clear that actually the question of exclusion, the evaluation exercise itself, evaluating exercise itself, in itself there is an element of exclusion. You have to look into the totality of facts and whatever, and therefore you don't need to go out there. And I think it began to make sense to me because let me give you an example from human resources management experience on an example. If you go out there looking for, you're looking for what? I'm looking at Mr. Aislam. You're not looking for him. You're looking for a particular employee, manager of sorts. Okay. Now, you cannot say in the advert that we do not need white people like Mr. Ainsley to apply. But you consider all applications that come through, everybody applies, and all the only qualification you have is to say, look, even we are in affirmative action, whatever, and so on, in terms of policy outlook and approach and stuff. And therefore, at the point of both shortlisting as well as interviews, you consider expertise and whatever and so forth, and level of skill and so on. But also, one of the considerations is whether or not, in terms of equity targets, as an organization, for instance, how many white people have you got and how many do you need? How many women do you need and how many don't you need and so forth? So that exercise in itself becomes almost like an issue. So it made sense to me. So I stepped down from my original lay, whatever, as a result of which we then issued the correction about the exclusion. Now, after evaluation, then the exercise that needed to follow was, of course, adjudication. Adjudication was to be conducted by a bit of adjudication of the compensation fund. That's when I began to pick up, amongst other things such as, by way of example, so many people of the bid adjudication committee resigned and said, okay, let's reconstitute it. After some to and froing and so forth, so it was reconstituted. They said, okay, let's sit down and do adjudication. Now, I think over almost three sittings of the bid adjudication, they did not deal with it. There were various sort of excuses that were being thrown in my direction, for example. One of those, you see there are governance issues. What are the governance issues? The issue of the exclusion of cited by the commissioner, the issue of I don't know what else, and the fact that some other people are from outside the department, and I said, okay, but they're outside government, they're within the state. So what exactly are the issues? So there was a bit of issues that were not properly clarified, when we put it that way, in terms of what those things were. So even when the bid adjudication committee was reconstituted, there was still this kind of delay. One of the delays that the latest one actually at the time was, the bid adjudication committee that was supposed to sit at 9 o'clock on that given day, because the DG had called the meeting of the executive management of the compensation fund at 11 on that day. So he did not sit because it coincided with the meeting that I called at 11. And I said, but the meeting is at 11. So 9 o'clock to 11 o'clock, you have 2 hours. So why is the thing not happening? I had also indicated, particularly to the commissioner, that indeed there is resistance to the issue of the turnaround strategy and, well, the forensic investigation thing, but that I am duty bound that I needed to deal with it. So at some point, I then got in the interaction that I had with him, Oyana has discussed with the minister. The minister is not in favor of the turnaround strategy, and of course the minister did say that they shouldn't be this approach on the turnaround, the forensic thing. And I said, no, but I find that thing strange, because the minister is also on record, even if you were to check hands here in Parliament, as well as news media clip, Media 24 and others, you would find that there had been articulations by the minister on the turnaround strategy. But in any case, the fact of the matter is that by law, as the hunting officer, there is no way that this thing would happen and still don't take corrective steps and measures to deal with it. At the time when I think it was the third or the fourth delay, an inexplicable kind of delay of the certification committee to sit and deal with this thing, I then sent a letter to contemplating to suspend the commissioner. And I said, I need reasons within 7 days as to why I should effectively not take disciplinary steps against you in the light of the inexplicable kind of delays relating to the compensation fund. I can't recall a specific date, but I think it was in July. 29th of July. Now, so we had 7 days, and I think the 7 days was to probably expire around about the 6th or so of August. And I had said to him that we also needed to sit on the 6th so that we go through the reasons why these things are not happening and so forth. So between 29th of July and the 3rd of August, there was no response from the side of the commission, except that the only letter that I got was from the minister on the 31st of July, which instructed that, firstly, I needed to withdraw my initiatives around the turnaround strategy and then the forensic investigation. Secondly, that I also needed to withdraw the letter contemplating suspending the commissioner thirdly, that the minister was taking over the compensation fund and would ensure that it functions better. Now, so that was the response. Then on the 4th of August, I got a letter from the commissioner basically stating the fact that because that letter that was written to the DG was also copied to the commissioner. So the commissioner writes to the DG and says, in light of the letter that I read, that the minister has issued it to you, I will not, in a sense, I'm not sure of it, because I'm summarizing here, I will not, respond to the letter contemplating suspension and my rights, whatever reserved and so forth. So that's before I advised the commissioner to say, look, this is the thing, and therefore I've been instructed and ordered in this kind of manner, and so on. Now, I responded, of course, to the letter that was issued by the minister. Firstly, in it, I was advising about some few things. Firstly, was to say that I disagreed, I think, with two things. First one was just an approach content in the sense that these issues ordinarily fall within the administrative ambit of an accounting office. They're just simply straightforward kind of matter. But also, secondly, that legally, they also fall within that very same ambit as defined in law, the Public Finance Management Act, amongst others, the COIDA Act itself, amongst others, as well as the Public Service Act and so forth, in terms of what is expected of an accounting officer to do in situations of this nature. And I did also indicate that the letter of instruction itself was interference in the administration. And I therefore asked the regulator to sit and ask for a meeting to sit to discuss the issue in a sense. But amongst other things, there were two other options that I had thrown in. The first option that I had said we needed to probably consider in a discussion, if it meant that in the discussion we would not agree, was that in any situation, when you are supervising people and the situation is turned around the other way in the manner in which it had unfolded, for example, in the composition fine, you can't maintain sanction discipline in that institution. You know, it's like, this means, you know, in a family setup, you have a husband and a wife.
That's right. I think that's continue with the
thing. Yeah, no, I was just trying to make the point.
I think
you can't maintain sanity and discipline in an organization where clearly you have this element where, whatever interpretation that you may give to it. That's the one. And of course, the result, I wanted to discuss the question of me having got to leave. That was one option. And I said, look, under the circumstances, it would be better for me that I need to leave, but let's discuss modalities in terms of how I need to do that. The second one, of course, okay, the second option is a desired option, the appetite that has clearly been demonstrated for the commissioner to report directly to the minister. In other words, no accounting officer and so forth. But that in itself has got legal problems. Unless you tamper with the law in terms of how it stands, you will not be able to have a situation where you have a direct line of reporting between a commissioner and the minister, for an example. You still need an accounting officer and so forth. And of course, I caution against the fact that there are these issues that have got legal implications and so on. But importantly, what I asked was that we needed to have this kind of emission. So between that point, I think, and any other point thereafter, I also wrote to the commissioner. I said, look, in the light of this instruction that I received, and specifically the issue of taking over the compensation fund and running it for the better, and of course it's a matter that he himself had also cited to me, because he had also cited and sent a letter of instruction to me. Therefore, it means I, as the accounting officer, I'm no longer responsible for the compensation fund. And that's also a point that I pointed out in the letter that I responded to the minister about. But in essence, what that means is that anything that relates to the compensation fund shall not come before me for consideration. It also means that the commissioner cannot sit in the management meetings of the department. And I cited the structures that he could not basically serve on, precisely because the reporting point has been changed, has been altered, in a sense. Now, so I was just advising him. Then came a response that said, yeah, I've instructed him. In fact, it was a communication between himself and the minister that I have instructed him not to report him. And that's not true. Because all I was saying was that I have an instruction, and I'm going to comply with that instruction. And that instruction says he should not necessarily be reported here. And that, of course, the lines of reporting, as I had said earlier on, had somewhat changed. Now, I'm not going to talk about the to and fro about, for instance, things that were, some of the things that had been said, for an example. Some of them is, this is a problem between myself and the commissioner. And I kept on saying to people that unless you stay here and say to me, why is it that is a personality problem between myself and the commissioner? Or something funny, Dodi, or something, I don't know. Then they can talk about that. Or he stole my goats or something. Then they can talk about it. Now, the fact is, this is an institutional problem. Now, and convention has it, for instance, those of you who have done accounting or were accountants and so on, or accountants, you would know this thing. If you receive an instruction from your supervisor, that instruction in law is called a lawful instruction. So if your supervisor says to you, as a finance manager, for instance, you shall sign off a check of 5 million rand in honor of or in favor of so-and-so, and you say, yeah, but this thing is not in line with the accounting standards and whatever, so on, acceptable accounting standards and so forth in the industry, and therefore it's not legal. You can, yes, advise that. But if the instruction is in writing, yours is to comply with it. Yours is to comply with it, but you must also, you are expected to also put it on record that you did counsel and advise that what you have been asked to do is wrong, is illegal, is whatever, and so forth. For today, okay? It's something else in terms of what then happens thereafter. So from that point onwards, and in the absence of any clarity and instruction to the contrary of the original instructions that I received, I have refused to, not refused, one, I have not pursued the turnaround strategy, I have not pursued the forensic investigation issue. I have also recused myself from anything that has got to do with the compensation plan. And of course, that would raise, it raises, of course, the legal issues and so forth. All I'm saying is that those legal issues, in a way, I can also argue that they are nullified by an instruction, which is a lawful instruction. So basically, that's where it is. If, of course, I've been trying to summarize this thing and trying to compress it, because there's a lot of what has happened. But if this committee is interested in this particular matter, this file contains all developments and processes relating to the issue that I've just spoken about, and further pieces of correspondence that have also been whatever. So I can also hand it over for further consideration at some point. So thank you very much.
All right. So you notice that in my history sitting here, I have not had an answer to a single question that long. But because of the concerns that you have for the fund, I had to indulge you and allow you to. And look, I was in my office by 7, and I started this report from page 1 to page last. You can see there are all sorts of black pens, marks, and pages turned upside down. And when I was done, I started again from page 1 and did the summary on myself. I wanted to have a proper and a clear sense of exactly what are the strategic issues that need to be dealt with. But your response has sort of thrown me off course a bit. And I want to ask for your indulgence from the minister, the commissioner, and the DG. And
and try that extreme corner, maybe have a little power with my comrades in terms of what we need to consider as a way of handling it. I have my own views, but the sort of processes that I had in mind seem to be thrown off course by the extent of your response. Even before I asked the commissioner to say anything or even the minister, I just want to check with my comrades. Can we have a 1 minute poll? Just indulge us. I don't think it will take us a minute. We're always very pointed. Dr. George, can we have a little poll?
Thank you.
Comrade, may we
compensation fund has reserves of over 23 billion. So money is not a problem that could be used to sort out the problems that are in the fund. So that is where we're at. We would want to reconvene again on Wednesday, the 6th of November. No longer with history. I don't think we want to go into that history. I think what we do, we take note of what the DG say. We don't want to believe or dispute what they say. That's not our business. We don't want to go there. All we want is that let's use these 2 weeks to go and sort out that problem around getting the turnaround strategy in place and getting the forensic audit so that we can move forward. Comrade Minister.
Thank you, Chairperson. I respect your decision as the members of the committee. But I know, Chairperson, you need to understand why the issue of the turnaround and the forensic audit was stopped. Maybe before you call us in that meeting, I would propose that we have to come and brief you in terms of the internal audit and also the Auditor General's recommendations as well. Because the reason I stopped that was based on the internal audit. And in fact, I must say to you, Chair, arising from the report of the internal audit and the issues raised by the Auditor General on the forensic audit, I decided to submit those two reports for the investigation by the SIU. Thank you very much, Chair.
I hear you, Comrade Minister, and I thank you for your brevity without going into the details. I would avail myself, Comrade Minister, for any engagement that will seek to give deeper context to some of the issues. But I would still say let us put the same. And I do want to say not that we don't have the appetite or are scared to give a platform for everyone to have the say. But I wouldn't want us to start there. But if when we come on the 6th, we're still where we are now, then we'll be prepared to sit down and listen. But I just feel that, this having just come, I think it is only correct for us to react in that way, to say, no, people, is it possible to find each other? So that if there are any misunderstandings in terms of the internal processes, these are smooth, these are cleared. And when you come to the committee, you come as a single delegation that is coming to push in one direction and clarify things for our common understanding. And we can all say this is a contribution that each one of us can make to ensure that things move forward. I would have loved to close it there, Dr. Josh. Yeah.
Thanks, Chairperson. I agree with the decision that we made earlier on, and I think that is the right one. But also hearing what the Minister had to say, and I certainly don't want to read between the lines, and I'm not doing that. But certainly what the Minister said, I think, was extremely important information. And she has offered to have that discussion with you. But I do think that discussion should be with GOPA and not exclusively with you, Chairperson, because I do understand how accounting works. The Minister clearly had a very good reason to do what she did. It's very clear from what she said. And I think it had a material impact on the management of that compensation fund. Thank you.
Right. No, I think let's leave it at that. That's why initially I said the DG is either correct or there's something is misunderstanding. In which case, the 2 weeks period will be to smooth out whatever variances are there. If they are not smoothed out, then it's fine. We'll come and listen to Trevor. I'm sure if you allow the commission, I will say something else, which will be extremely important. And I don't think that's what we want at this point. Our main interest is how do we assist the compensation fund to be where it is supposed to be in terms of its mandate. I think for me that is the area of greatest interest. So let's leave it at that. Comrade Minister, accounting accounting officer. Peter Paul will send a formal note today just to confirm what we have agreed on today, and then we'll take it up from there. Comrade Chen, really want that for your continued presence and support.
Look, guys. Mangena will interpret for you.
Can I suppose that maybe you can consider having the meeting on Tuesday? Just, I can request you to be excused.
No, thank you very much. Let's use the 5th then, not the 6th.
So that's right.